buyouts.
Welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. We've got a good show today, a lot of news. We're going to be talking about everything from sequestration to buyouts to the latest party scandal in government and some things like phased retirement and that sort of thing. My first guest is Jason Miller. He is a managing editor here at Federal News Radio, and he's been working on some interesting stuff and going to talk to us about it. Jason, what's the retirement info?
The retirement info, well, I think there's two things that are happening that OPM Director John Barry spoke about just recently. I think the first one is around the phased retirement. Remember, that was the bill that got passed by the House. And basically, it allows federal employees to ease their way out of service, not just hit a hard stop and leave. And the goal behind that, obviously, is I think, twofold. Number one is help agencies deal with the fact that there are so many people who are either A, eligible to retire, or B, planning on retiring, and you can keep these people around a little bit longer. And then B, it also helps the agencies with what they call knowledge management. The idea where part of the bill, if you decide to go through this phase retirement approach, you have to spend 20-30% of your time as a mentor or training your successor. I think that's a great idea, because there's one thing in government that's usually missing is the knowledge management piece. It's just not done well by agencies, and as people leave, what happens to what they know? And a lot of times,
call it institutional memory. Yeah.
A lot of times, they ended up getting hired back as consultants because no one can do their job.
Well, you know, I think that's important. You're right, because a lot of times it's important to know why you do things the way you do. It may look silly coming in as a newcomer, and in fact, it may be a silly way to do business. But when somebody says, we did this because, we instituted this because, again, that's part of the institutional memory.
Right. A lot of times there's laws and regulations that nobody remembers or heard of, but that one person who's been in that job for 25 or 30 or 40 years has to do it. So one of the things about the phased retirement is it got passed by the Congress and signed into law recently. Now OPM is putting together the regulations for how the program will work. And what's interesting about this, John Barry, the OPM director, spoke just last week at the, interestingly enough, the Fairfax Economic Development meeting. There's one right there in Tyson's Corner area in Virginia. And he brought up the idea, listen, our innovation lab, which our web editor, Jolie Lee, did a great piece you can find on federalnewsradio.com. And the innovation lab is actually writing the regulations for the phased retirement law. Now, this is a lot different. Usually, as we know, regulations take time and lots of effort and lots of people. And John Barry says, listen, this is so important. I'd like to get these done in a different way, in a new way. And he said, you know, let's see if we can put it in this innovation lab and see if there's some new ideas that can come together to do this.
In interviews and studies of senior employees, by senior, I mean older as well as higher grade, many of them say they don't want to quit work. They don't want to retire. There's no shuffleboard court near them. What they would like to do is work less, have more time off, maybe a three-day weekend or a four-day weekend. Is that what this phased retirement is all about?
Absolutely. It's the idea that you can figure out how many hours per week agreement with your manager, with your agency, and then you work those hours, and it doesn't come off your pension, meaning that that the agency benefits from having you around still, whether it's, you know, 16 hours a week or 24 hours a week, and you can not have to work 40 hours, 50 hours or more a week. So there's a trade going on here, and what OPM is trying to do with this, with the regulations, is tell agencies how to make the law work. How the law sets the big parameters. What's the steps to make phased retirement happen? Now, John Barry says, you know, we'll have to see how the innovation lab goes forward. He'd like to get something out sooner than later, obviously, because, you know, a lot of people do retire. When's the best day to retire, Mike Causey?
Yeah, usually the 31st of December or the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd of January.
Right, we're coming right up there. And I think that, you know, he's not sure he can get something out in the meantime before then, but he'd like to at least get something out there so people know, okay, I can understand how this may work. Maybe I'll push it off, because I think, isn't July another big time for retirements?
It is big, yeah. And in fact, they've been surging this year. Every month they've had more than expected. But Yeah, sooner it'd be better than later.
And one of the things that, Director Barry also talked about, I said, well, any thoughts about an interim role? I mean, because sometimes with regulations that are pressing, the way the government does is they put out a you know, sometimes a proposed notice of advanced rulemaking, and then they put out a proposed rule, then they put out, then they get comments, and they review the comments, and they put out the final rule, and that's when it becomes effective. Sometimes, and this happens with acquisition rules more often than not, they'll put out what they call an interim rule with a request for comments, meaning it's effective now, but we know we'll get comments, and we know we will need to make some changes to it, and then we'll put out a final rule down the road. But we think this is so important, we need to put out the interim rule now.
I don't want to get too much in the weeds in this thing, but if, say, I worked out a deal where I worked 3 days a week, 24 hours, so I would be paid my federal salary, presumably, for those 24 hours, and then I could keep my retirement?
Correct. It would not impact your retirement.
Okay. So I'd actually be making more. I'd be doing well.
That's the question. What I think the regulations will have to show is would they then get two-thirds of, you know, so if you're going to work 3 days a week, right?
Uh-huh.
So maybe the retirement would then only start at, you know, two-fifths of normal.
Okay.
Meaning there'd be some kind of trade-off. And I think that's what this innovation lab at OPM and as they're developing the regulations based on the law, that they have to figure those things out.
Well, and because there's so many questions with this, people think, oh, just do it. But it gets so technical. For instance, that three-day example, you work 3 days, you're off two. So you get a prorated retirement for that. Does that build up your retirement?
I think that's another great question. I would imagine my guess would be they would have to.
Uh-huh.
There's been, to say, okay, you're not going to, because you still get paid for those 24 hours at your regular rate, but you no longer get part, you know, no longer gets contribution to your pension or to your, you know, CSRS or FERS. Then maybe the person steps back and says, maybe it's not worth my time then. You know, maybe I can go be a consultant,
right,
or maybe go work somewhere else.
And probably most people that are going to do this are not doing it for the money. I think
right.
They'd like the time, and they'd like to be able to mentor. If people have a stake in government, if they've been there for 30 years, they want it to work right. So you were telling me something intriguing and just a snippet of it yesterday about a leave bank.
Right. So one of the ideas that's starting to kind of drum up based on this phased retirement, you know, kind of it's related but not the same thing, is the idea from Congressman Jerry Connolly, the Democrat from Virginia, who's a big, obviously, supporter of federal workers, with the idea that, well, what if you're a federal worker and you work in the government for 5 years or 7 years or 15 years and you want to leave and go to work in the private sector, but you think you'll come back? Could you bank your leave, meaning your sick leave or your vacation leave, instead of getting it paid out? So when you come back in, you have this bank that maybe gets interest, maybe, you know, kind of continues to accrue at a very slow rate. But at least when you come back, you have some benefits. You're not starting at zero. So I asked John Barry, again, OPM director, about this, and he goes, listen, that's a very intriguing idea. It's something that maybe, you know, the White House would want to take a look at. He obviously can't commit to it because everything's got to come down from the White House. But the point is, right now, when you leave government after 5, 7, whatever many years, you get a payout. It's part of, you know, you lose your, the leave goes to zero. So when you come back into government, you start at zero again. And that's frustrating to a lot of people, where in some private sector jobs, you come in with 2 weeks or a month vacation right away. It's part of the negotiations. With government, you know, you can work something maybe on the side.
Yeah, but
officially you're at zero.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, too, and I would think, just at the top of my head, that would benefit women in particular, because so many women are forced to leave the workforce. You know, they have kids or school-age kids, and women, I believe, typically have less service time than men, and that's the primary reason.
Right, and then when you come back to the workforce, your kids still are in school, probably, or you know, or if you have elder family members, you know, parents or grandparents that need help, and all of a sudden you come back in and you have no leave, you're either borrowing leave against, you know, against yourself, or you're doing, you know, you're getting not paid for it, which, you know, kind of adds to the hardship. And I think that, you know, Congressman Connolly sees that and says, well, maybe there's something we can do about this. And maybe that's, you know, kind of something else on the agenda in the next congressional session.
Well, and you mentioned something about possibly paying interest on that leave. I want to get to that when we come back on a break here on Federal News Radio. Be right back.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon. For more than 60 years, Raytheon has been a leader in the continuous improvement of one of the nation's most important assets, the National Airspace System. The FAA and Raytheon are working together to replace current systems with new technology that will support greater capacity and enhanced capabilities, safely and cost-effectively. Benefits also include saving fuel, cutting down on noise, and reducing carbon emissions. Modernization of air travel. It's happening today.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
For a faster, easier way for your agency to go green, choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EP, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Attention computer, IS, and business analysts. Everything is possible at Lockheed Martin. Attend the Lockheed Martin Open House hiring event in Waldorf on Wednesday, October 10th from 9 to 6 at the Hilton Garden Inn at 10385 O'Donnell Place in Waldorf. Meet one-on-one with our recruiters and explore opportunities for experienced business analysts, computer information systems, IT systems test, and evaluation engineers. For details, go to LockheedMartinJobs.com/IndianHead1 and join the leading provider of systems, products, and services to the U.S. government. Attend the Lockheed Martin Open House in Waldorf, Wednesday, October 10th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Waldorf. Opportunities exist for computer information systems and business analysts. Visit LockheedMartinJobs.com/IndianHead1. That's LockheedMartinJobs.com/IndianHead1. Discover that everything is possible at Lockheed Martin, equal opportunity employer.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives. The Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Jason Miller. He's managing editor here at Federal News Radio, and we're talking some of the interesting things he's been looking at this week. And one of them is with the Leave Bank, who we talked about, phased retirement. And in the Leave Bank, you know, and you say this is just an idea, a concept of Congressman Jerry Connolly, and that John Berry, director of OPM, said it's an interesting idea, but it's a long time in coming. But one of the thoughts was, when you leave government, you leave your sick leave and you leave your annual leave instead of taking a payment for it, and then when and if you come back, you pick it up. Could be very nice. And is there a possibility that they would pay interest on it? And even if not, I would think it's obviously going to be more valuable. Your annual leave, your salary, if you don't get any promotions, will be much higher 10 years in the future than it is now.
So it's hard to say whether they'd pay interest, because that's not something that I think they've thought that much about. It's just an idea, but it would make sense. I mean, if you think about I'll give you a kind of an off the wall example, but if you're a Washington Capitals season ticket holder, you've paid them money for your season tickets. Well, Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Caps, had come back and said, well, we're going to pay everyone 1% interest for holding your money even though the season hasn't started yet. And I think that kind of concept, that kind of good faith, mm-hmm. you may not get a lot of interest, and 1% is not a lot, but it's better than nothing. So I think that it was something that's definitely in the realm of possibility. Again, we're going to have to see how things get pushed through. But I think the other piece of that is you could also use it as kind of a de facto bank account, where if you leave government and you work for 10 years and you have 2.5 or 3 weeks of sick leave and 2 weeks of annual leave all saved up, and then, in 3, 5, 7 years, you say, I don't think I'm going to come back. I'm going to cash that out. That's a nice little big chunk of change, too, that you could be pulling out.
Has grown, No, very interesting concept. And, again, you can see the devil's in the details. Anytime you get any legislation that deals with human beings, with people, particularly at the work level, so very tough. Hey, I know you've been working with this Feds Feed Feds program. Could you explain a little bit about what it is and where it is?
Sure. So this is the third year in a row that OPM has led the Feds Feeds Families program. It's a food drive for the National Capital Area Food Banks. And John Barry tells a great story about how the food banks have been struggling during the recession and during the fact that more families were in need of help, and the food banks were struggling. So the federal government stepped in and started raising and having basically contests of which agency could raise the most donations. And he said, listen, this is our third year in a row, and he gave us a little bit of an exclusive around the latest numbers. And they said that in 2012, this past 3 months, they raised 7 million pounds of food for the National Capital Region. And over the last 3 years, it was 15 million pounds of food for Fed Feeds Families. That's an amazing amount of food. It just shows you when not only the administration, whichever administration it is, says this is important, but when feds say, hey, we need your help. I mean, the combined federal campaign is another perfect example of this. But, to raise 15 million pounds of food for the hungry families in the Washington, D.C. area, Virginia, Maryland, it's a good warm feeling that says, hey, look, this is what, when people come together, this is what they can accomplish.
I went down to the food bank and saw, and there were federal workers who were volunteering. And the interesting thing is, anybody who does this says, okay, we'll go down and help dish out food on Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving. But there's 363 other days of the year, too, and they need people constantly, and that's a huge amount of food.
And that's why they said they did it over the summer, because everyone's very good about the Thanksgiving, Christmas time, but the rest of the year there's people in need, too. And that's why they decided, I think they did it from something like, May through August or something, the kind of the summer months when people tend to go away and people focus on family and vacation. And I think this was a way to kind of put it an additional focus. It's like there was a group that did Christmas in April. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was a kind of a Habitat for Humanity. They rebuild a house. Same kind of concept. Let's do it during a non-traditional time because people need help all the time.
Well, that's a great thing to do. I mean, for the humanitarian aspect of it, and because it's needed. But there is a thing that a turnabout in that, and that is a lot of schools now, as early as grade school, are urging children to get credit for volunteer service. And of course, it counts toward college and all that sort of thing. And that would be a good way, particularly if you're a suburban kid, to find out what life is really like in the big city. Go down to one of these soup kitchens.
It's very true. And I think it's, just the fact is that 7 million pounds is an incredible amount of food that the feds have donated. And the fact is, that's about half over 3 years. I mean, for whatever reason, this year, people just really, kind of reached inside and really did a really nice job.
I met a guy down there. He had come in right out of prison on a work release program, and he was sort of working for minimum wage. He's now a chef. He's now a chef, Okay. Oh, you mentioned two intriguing words during the break. You said wellness pilot. What's that all about?
So this was a pilot that OPM GSA and Interior kicked off probably about 2.5 or 3 years ago by now. And there was this idea that they're all located very close to each other down in downtown Washington. And if you set up different pieces of a wellness approach in each of the agencies, and you could share it. Maybe one has a gym, and one has a clinic, and one has, you know, the cafeteria, and then you really put healthy food in the cafeteria and open the clinic up for medical checkups and, you know, with diabetes screening or, you know, shots or whatever you need. And then you have a gym that's open and people can use the gym, and the three of them can combine and share the wealth, if you will, so people can do better. Now, unfortunately, Interior had to drop out of this pilot, according to John Barry, OPM director, because of just funding issues.
But it's too bad, because I think they have the gym.
They have the gym, exactly. But OPM continues along, and one thing about the OPM pilot that's been really interesting is obviously they've been subsidizing the bike share program, which has been good. This is the bike. You see it all over D.C. now.
Yeah, red bikes, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, John Barry said, listen, we're really finding that people are making a difference. He goes, I got in the elevator. He tells a story. And someone just shook his hand and said, thank you so much. You know, I've lost 25 pounds because of the wellness program. And, of course, there's a piece to it. But you get support at work. No one's bringing in donuts every day, or no one's bringing in cake. And you get a group together. Again, it's like Fed Feeds Families. It's the power of the group that can then help you reach a goal, whatever that goal is, whether it's to be more healthy, exercise, go walking during lunch, whatever it is. It's that power together. So, you know, it was a really good news about it. And he goes, they've also offered testing and counseling and stuff like that that are really making a difference for the people in at OPM.
Yeah, and the government already has smoking cessation programs and things like that. So, that's obviously been a trend for some years in the private sector, and now the government is catching up and maybe in some cases surpassing them by offering this kind of thing. And then the peer pressure at work, too, let's all go walk, at quick lunch, and let's go walk.
Right, and it's a good kind of peer pressure. Let's be clear about that. So there's positive peer pressure and negative.
Yeah, so we get it all around. Here,
exactly. Okay.
All right, so what else are you working on?
So, you know, today's a shift back to my technology focus. You know, mm-hmm. today is there's a big report put out by the Tech America Foundation, which is the industry association for technology companies, and they're going to release the report on what they call big data. Now, this is the latest in another buzzword that you hear about technology. You know, it was the cloud, and now it's big data. But it's the idea of there's so many devices and so many people and so many systems that are taking in data, taking in information. How do you process it? How do you analyze it? How do you make sure you're getting the right data to the right decision maker? So that'd be my report later this afternoon with Francis Rose on In Depth, and tomorrow morning on the Federal Drive with Tom and Emily.
Very good. Okay. Somebody asked me the other day, and I punted on this, but he said, in a few words, can you explain what the cloud is? What is the cloud?
What is the cloud? Yes. So think of it this way. The cloud is where your data lives, okay, or your email lives in the internet. It doesn't live on a specific box, a specific piece of hardware. It just lives in the internet. And so, for instance, if you have Gmail, or if you have a Yahoo account, or if you have another form of web that's in the cloud, it doesn't live on your machine. You just go to it from any machine you can and bring it up and read your email and send an email, and it lives in a data center. And that data center doesn't matter where it is, because as long as you have access to an internet browser, i.e. Mozilla, Firefox, you can then get to your email. So the cloud is this idea of it's just, it lives in the internet.
I thought I could do that anyhow, though. I mean, I have Gmail, and if I go to a computer.
Exactly, Gmail's in the cloud, right. Yeah. But if your work email, you can only get it from work, or you have to get it through a lot of times email would only be in your office, and not, you can't get it from anywhere you want. Now, there are web browsers that can do that now, but the idea is with the cloud is there's a lot of benefits, such as you can, if you need more email space, it's easy to get more email space. If you need less, it's easy to shrink it. Okay. If you're working from in your own data center, you have to add a box, and that becomes complicated and expensive, and especially in government, it can take a long time for the acquisition cycle.
I think I'll just tell him it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Well,
thank you, Jason.
There's arguments on that, too. It's
all
another
right.
show.
Thank you,
Mike.
Sir. And we'll be right back here after taking a short break on Federal News Radio.
Geico's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from Geico. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Let's play a quick game. I say salt. You might say pepper. What about Kaiser Permanente? I'll wait. Still waiting. Did anybody say advanced technology? It's true. We have the world's largest private electronic medical record system. It's how our doctors know instantly if you're overdue for tests or life-saving screenings, which means our members get fast, convenient, high-quality care. What about top doctors? That's true, too. Many of our doctors come from schools such as Harvard, Stanford, and Johns Hopkins, just to name a few. And how about highest ranked? As in J.D. Power and Associates ranked Kaiser Permanente highest in member satisfaction among commercial health plans in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. region 4 years in a row. Of course, if you did say any of those things, then, well, you're probably already a member. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/MidAtlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. For J.D. Power and Associates award information, go to jdpower.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
There are reports from the Associated Press that small special ops forces arrived at American embassies throughout North Africa. In the months before, militants launched a fiery attack that killed the U.S. ambassador in Libya. The goal reportedly was to set up a quick response team that could strike a target or rescue a hostage. The teams reportedly had been there for 6 months, suggesting concern about what happened in Benghazi that led to the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens had been a concern for some time. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, drug smuggling and violence threaten America's southwest border. Border Patrol agents need to identify and track moving targets more than 7 miles away. Only General Dynamics has built the tower system that keeps watch over 40,000 miles of U.S. coastline. Only EADS has installed systems that protect more than 8,000 miles of national land border worldwide. Together, they are the right team to protect the nation's borders. Learn more at borderdetection.com.
The challenges faced by agencies demand a new way of managing existing IT assets while accelerating the adoption of technology such as cloud and mobility to drive increased efficiencies. How can the government provide services and support the mission in this new era? Tune in to the IT Innovation in the New Era of Government panel, sponsored by Unisys, to hear CIOs from HUD, EPA, and the Census Bureau to share how they're navigating the change in their organizations. Tune in on Tuesday, October 9th at noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Michael Tice, chief counterintelligence expert at CERT Insider Threat Center, commented during the panel discussion titled, "The Accidental Insider Threat, Is Your Organization Ready?" Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
What is a malicious insider? We define that as an employee or a contractor or someone who has authorized access to an organization's systems and networks and uses that access to create harm or damage or something that's inappropriate against organizational policies. So the unintentional would be the lack of the intent.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. In today's ever-changing environment, effective cybersecurity takes more than simply implementing IT solutions. Whether the threat is deliberate or accidental, from an inside or outside source, Booz Allen Hamilton's holistic approach enables organizations to adopt a remediation strategy that most effectively addresses their security requirements and risk profile. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I just finished chatting with Jason Miller, our managing editor here at the Federal News Radio, and you may want to tune into the show later on where it's archived on our homepage so you can listen anytime. But Jason had some interesting things to say about retirement, I know, which is always of interest to people. My next guests are Stephen Losey and Sean Riley. They are senior writers for the Federal Times and very familiar, obviously, up with the beat. Gentlemen, are you there?
We're here. How are you?
In your studio in Virginia, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Great for you. Listen, I know you got a lot of stuff to talk about, but, Sean, maybe we could start out with the postal buyouts, because there seems to be this never-ending stream of buyouts at the Postal Service. What are they doing and how come?
It sure does. Well, they're doing it. Basically, they're trying to shed payroll as quickly as they can, and this is because most postal employees are protected by no-layoff clauses in their union contracts. Offering buyouts and early retirements is the only major route the Postal Service has apart from normal attrition. And as you know, earlier this year, the Postal Service offered buyout early retirement packages to postmasters and to mail handlers. This week they announced, or the union announced actually, that about 180,000 clerks, drivers, et cetera, represented by the American Postal Workers Union, will be eligible for $15,000 buyouts, and for many of those folks, those would be coupled with an early retirement package if they chose to accept. The buyouts would be paid out in two installments, one of $10,000 in May of 2013, the other of $5,000 in May of 2014. And for full-time employees, they've got to decide within about 2 months, by December 3rd, whether to accept it. Part-timers have a little bit longer, but this is this has been long awaited, I think, by many clerks and other folks represented by the APWU who are thinking about leaving, but didn't want to leave any money on the table if there was that opportunity.
Well, 187,000 is a lot of people, and I'm sure they have a core number of clerks they need. What if more than they want they're trying to shed bodies each year? But what if more people go in for the offer than they are ready to pay out? Can they deny a buyout to someone?
That's a good question. The terms of the agreement, the memorandum of understanding between the union and the Postal Service, does limit the number of folks in a couple of facilities who can accept the offer.
Okay.
My guess is they do have some discretion, but at the same time, there are a lot of postal employees who have been what they call excessed, which means because they can't be laid off, they can be assigned to work at another facility that could be a long way from where they actually live. And so I think the one objective of the union in agreeing to this buyout incentive is to free up positions, created by vacancies for folks who leave, and then move some of these excess people into these jobs so they won't have to have, quite such a long commute. So I think given the amount of, given that the Postal Service wants to cut its workforce from around 530,000 now to 400,000 in 2015, I think they have a lot of discretion, or at least the managers feel they have a lot of discretion in moving people around, and will probably have a cushion to protect themselves to make sure that normal operations can continue.
Well, the buyouts being offered in other federal agencies, and we have it on our buyout tracker, numerous agencies, Air Force among them, they're $25,000 before deductions. Maybe a dumb question, but why is the Postal Service, they were offering $20,000, and this new round is $15,000? Is there a message there?
I think the message is the Postal Service is very, very short on cash. They had to expense the postmaster's buyout, which was $20,000 payable in 2 years. They had to expense that, I think, in July, and that was $88 million right there. The Postal Service is riding on a very small cash cushion. I think they just don't have the money, or to be more generous. They clearly want to, as many people as possible, I think, to take advantage of this buyout, but this is probably, they would argue, I think, is the best they can offer. Now, there is a legislation passed by the Senate that would refund the Postal Service around $11 billion in excess contributions to the federal employees' retirement system, and they could use some of that money for buyouts and presumably sweeten the offer, but the problem is that bill has not passed, and so that money is not available.
Well, and, I would think, too, just the psychological warfare here, is the others were offering 25, you start out with 20, and some people are going to wait around until it's sweetened, and in fact, you drop it by $5,000. So the people that are hanging around were hanging around for more now, but saying, I better take this while I can get it.
Well, there's no way of knowing whether this could be the best it's going to get.
Yeah.
There may not be a better offer down the road. Obviously, some people think so. But I think there are also some postal employees who are just, they're eligible to retire. They're tired of the downsizing. There's been a lot of turmoil within postal operations. You've got, a number of mail processing plants that were closed or consolidated this summer. More is in the works, more downsizings in the works for next year and the year after. I think for a lot of postal employees, they just don't see any end to this, and they just want to get out.
Yeah, okay. Steve, I know you've been looking at the VA, and we've had that Inspector General's report, and then that sudden retirement, I guess they're calling it, a resignation of a high-ranking VA official. What's going on over there?
Yeah, the
VA's Inspector General for several months has been looking into two conferences that were held last year in Orlando and accusations of excessive spending, lavish spending, and improper gifts. And the report came out yesterday, concluded that VA spent a little bit more than $6 million on these two conferences, and that of those, about $762,000 was wasted. So we're talking more than $750,000 in unauthorized, unnecessary, and or wasteful spending. And that money went to things like the infamous Patton video that they spent $50,000 on to get a actor who was doing an impression of George C. Scott in the famous movie, trying to give a pep talk. They spent $281,000 on audiovisual services, catering, food, beverages, almost $100,000 in swag, basically unnecessary promotional items like USB drives and things like that. There was a complete, according to this IG report, there's a complete breakdown in leadership at many levels. There's a complete breakdown in the contracting process. And yes, the chief human capital officer, John Sepulveda, he ended up resigning on Sunday as a result of this investigation. The IG report said that Mr. Sepulveda lied to investigators about that Patton video. They say that he said in an interview that he never saw it before it was shown. Other people interviewed by investigators disagreed and said several people said that he not only saw the video but made suggestions on how to tweak them. And later, Mr. Sepulveda said that, yes, he did actually watch the videos. He said, when I spoke to him yesterday, he said it was an honest mistake. He said that day, it was more than a year ago, he was very busy with several meetings on Capitol Hill. It was a short week. It was the 4th of July week. And he said, you know, it slipped his mind, and he filed an affidavit later correcting the record after the IG, that is, had finished its draft report. But the report dings Mr. Sepulveda on several things, not just the Patton video. They said that he abdicated his responsibilities to provide the proper oversight of this issue. So that is to say, you know, Mr. Sepulveda is now gone. There are two more people who are unnamed who were involved in this whole conference issue who are now on leave. There could be more people who lose their jobs over it. We'll just have to wait and see what the VA's investigation, VA's further review, that is, surfaces.
It's from the They Never Learn department. Remember that infamous video with the GSA that was sort of done to a kind of a rap sort of thing that was, I thought, was not at all funny or witty in any way. Did you see it?
I did, and I did kind of find it funny, to be honest.
Yeah, age thing.
I may be biased because they reference Federal Times in the video.
Well, so. I think somebody stepping on a rake and getting hit in the head is funny, too. But I thought that was kind of painful for me. The Patton video that you referred to, the VA, I found that incredibly strange because if they wanted to emulate George C. Scott, you know, he was a pretty strapping, robust guy when that was made. And the whole point of being Patton was that the uniform fit beautifully. And, in fact, Patton had tailored made uniforms. He was a rich man as well. But this, I thought this was a joke at first, that it was the guy that came out.
Yeah, I give him credit for this. He did have the voice down pretty well, but he didn't look much like the general.
I would not have followed him over the hill to anything.
Yeah. But you know, I think what is interesting, I'm glad you brought up the GSA issue, because this scandal is in many ways very reminiscent of the infamous Las Vegas conference from a couple of months ago, in that in this IG report, Mr. Sepulveda is quoted as saying that he wanted this to be a signature event that would bring the HR community together, which made me think of
over the top,
exactly. Yep. You know, Jeff Neely from GSA, he said he wanted that Vegas conference to be over the top. And I've been talking to people on Capitol Hill, lawmakers and senators, who are very concerned about this. And while there are no plans for hearings as of yet, they're definitely looking into this. And they are very concerned that, you know, that these two examples show that there may be in some corners of the government a culture of excessive spending on conferences, the culture that where they think we have to make this these conferences, these business conferences, a big happening with music and fun. And
outdo the last one.
And outdo the last
one. Yeah. Let me hold that thought, if you will. We've got to take a short break. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Experts in Health topic is breast cancer detection, featuring Dr. Kathy Wolcott, a family practitioner with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the Kaiser Permanente Silver Spring Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Wolcott at Kaiser Permanente. We understand that early detection and treatment of breast cancer can increase the chance of survival, which is why Mid-Atlantic Permanente physicians of all specialties proactively review each member's electronic medical record to see when she had her last mammogram. A woman may come in for an ophthalmology appointment for an eye issue, but she can leave with her mammogram appointment in hand, often having the option to complete the mammogram in the very same medical center that day. Only Kaiser Permanente doctors from all specialties can do this. It's no surprise that we have the highest mammography screening rate in the region.
Dr. Wolcott was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Breast cancer screening rate as reported in HEDIS 2011.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
If you want to enjoy the best Greece has to offer, you just can't miss the St. Catherine's Annual Greek Festival this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia. Come out and enjoy the best homemade Greek foods in the area, like lamb, Athenian chicken, calamari, Greek salads, and don't forget the wonderful Greek desserts like baklava. You must taste this homemade sweet this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia at St. Catherine's Annual Spring Festival. Call 703-671-1515, 703-671-1515.
Do you hear that? That's a satellite 500 miles above the Earth. And no, you can't hear it or see it, but it's there. With Raytheon technology that's helping to predict the weather, monitor our climate, or capture images of our planet. A lot of Raytheon solutions are actively at work in much the same way. Unseen, but unmatched. After all, when your mission is space, the possibilities are infinite. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte. The amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
FCA Bethesda's 5th Health IT Day comes October 18th to the Bethesda North Marriott. Hear from more than 25 federal speakers on electronic health records, shared services, big data, mobility, and more. Keynotes from Roger Baker of VA, Tony Trenkel of HHS, and Frank Bateman of HHS. Register today at fciabethesda.org/healthitday. FCA Bethesda thanks its sponsors Adobe, CNSI, Deltek, EMC, IBM, KGS, KPMG, National Government Services, and NCI.
This is Mark Amtower.
For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Riley. They're senior writers with the Federal Times, and we covered the postal buyout situation earlier, and we were talking about the scandal, if you will, the conference, the two conferences in Orlando, Florida, that the VA held for HR purposes, and they spent, did I get that right, $6 million on two conferences?
That's right, $6.1 million.
That's astounding in and of itself, even if every penny was worth it. During the break, we're talking about that and the GSA situation. Of course, in the GSA case, the administrator fired a couple of people, and then she herself resigned. In this case, it was a lower-level resignation, although still pretty high up in the VA. He was what, director of HR?
In VA?
Yes.
Yeah, John Sepulveda. He was the chief human capital officer.
Okay. You know, I was thinking when I was a young reporter, one of my assignments was to cover a crime, we called it the cops. And I was amazed that people would commit the same same mistakes all over and over again. You know, give somebody your wallet for safekeeping while you're up to some nefarious action, and lo and behold, you come back and either they're gone or the money's gone from your wallet. And it seems like these agencies never learn.
Yeah, but to be fair, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, you know, this VA conference happened last summer. The GSA conference happened in 2010. So those all happened before the GSA thing became news. And since then, since GSA made headlines and made the nightly news across the country, agencies are cracking down and tightening up on a lot of things. GSA has canceled or scaled back several conferences. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, for the rest of the year
how
long it will last. Yeah.
Yeah, and we know in the era of YouTube and Facebook and whatnot, a lot of these things, this has probably been going on for a long time, maybe decades, maybe a century, but as long as they've had conferences. But it's very easy to find out about this now.
That's right. I mean, for this VA thing, there was the VA released or turned over a video of these conferences, and there was a video shown at one of these conferences where people were singing Michael Jackson's Beat It at karaoke, and they cut a bunch of clips, just silly clips to the song. And this is the kind of thing that doesn't look very good, and it goes up online. And people look at it and they say, my God, what are these people doing with my taxpayer dollars?
Well, it's been a while since we've had a scandal about credit card abuse in the federal agencies, but it's coming.
Yeah, well, you know, purchase cards were involved in this VA thing. It's one of the examples of the complete breakdown of contracting standards related to this. There are some cases where people who weren't authorized to be making contracts were using their purchase cards. They were doing what I believe is called split purchases, where, you know, you've got a $3,000 cap on how much you can charge at one time. So they want to charge a $5,000 thing. So they run the card for $2,500 and run the card for $2,500 more. That's just a hypothetical example.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing that was going on here. So, yeah, purchase card abuse is definitely a facet of this whole VA scandal.
Yeah, okay. Sean, I know you've been looking at the sequestration situation. The clock is ticking. It's either if the Mayan calendar is proved incorrect, if the world isn't destroyed, then it will on the 21st of December, then come January 2nd, 3rd, or 4th, sequestration hits, right?
Right, and I guess at least in Washington or in the federal government, life as we know it will end, according to some of the more dire predictions. The latest manifestation of this came out, not too surprisingly, late Friday afternoon when the Office of Management and Budget released a memo or posted on its website, essentially telling contractors that the government would pick up any liability regarding their contractor's responsibility to notify employees 60 calendar days in advance of any layoffs. Now, as you know, sequestration would take effect January 2nd, so 60 days prior to January 2nd would probably be what number, 3rd or 4th, and
right before the election.
Right before the election. And so, you know, the Obama administration has told contractors they don't need to comply with this, you know, presumably because sequestration won't happen. But then in this memo on Friday, OMB indicated that some contractors are still considering issuing these notices. And we should note that a lot of the people who might be getting these notices would be in Virginia, where there's a very hot Senate race going on between two former governors, Democrat Tim Kaine and George Allen, where potential defense cuts and sequestration are a big issue. So anyway, OMB essentially told contractors that that they're covered by the government for any claims, costs, et cetera, that might litigation costs that might arise out of this. And what you've had this week is Republican members of the Senate accusing the Obama administration of quote unquote bribing defense firms to get them to avoid layoff notices right before the election.
Well, and it was interesting, too, that we all reported that when the White House said some weeks back that sequestration would be disastrous to the government, as an employer, and yet shortly thereafter, the Labor Department, somebody must have looked at the calendar, the Labor Department looked at it and said, no, you don't have to send out these notices. It would be premature.
Well, we're trying to thread a very narrow needle here, I think,
yeah.
Or at least politically, that's what this means. On the one hand, you want Congress to be concerned. On the other hand, you don't want contractors telling tens of thousands of employees that they're going to be out of work as of early January. And in fairness to the administration, I mean, there's the sequestration begins on January 2nd. I don't think that means that existing contracts or contracts for which funds have already been obligated would be directly affected, at least not immediately. So there might not be the need for instant layoffs. And there's always the possibility that even if sequestration did hit on January 2nd, Congress and the White House within a couple of weeks could magically come to an agreement that would head off the worst effects. And for contractors, that would, if they've laid off all these employees, then they'd have to go to the hassle of bringing them back with a lot of attendant disruption.
Well, as you've pointed out, too, it's in everybody's interest to put the worst foot forward here, put the worst case scenario out there if they're playing chicken and trying to scare the other side.
Right, but the trick is in putting that worst foot forward, but without having any direct effect in advance. And if you're telling people 2 months ahead of time that they're going to be out of that they'll be laid off, that would have that would probably be going a little further, at least than the administration wants at this point.
Yeah. Well, now what about the F word? What about furloughs? Is that what you're hearing? Furloughs as opposed to firing?
That's the word. I mean, the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts, which runs the federal court system, has already acknowledged that they ran an analysis early this year, which they're in the process of revising, I believe. But based on current workforce figures at that point, they were looking at furloughing a couple of thousand people, roughly around one fifth of their workforce. For up to 4 weeks. For agencies, this would be much, furloughs would be much more advantageous, easier to manage than reduction in force or layoffs, just because, one, you wouldn't, you'd have more discretion deciding when people would have to take time off. At the same time, you are going to need these employees down the road when presumably sequestration is, situation is resolved. And that would obviously be a lot more difficult to do if they've been RIFed. And there are also costs associated with a RIF, having to pay people for accumulated leave time, et cetera, that you don't incur with a furlough.
Well, in the month-long furlough, I think we agreed is probably 20 days,
mm-hmm.
five working days. And Steve, feel free to chime in on this. Congress has shown an amazing ability to do nothing for the last several years, and more than that, they've been running on continuing resolutions, it seems like, forever. The election's coming up, so most people say nothing's going to happen before that. Then you have the lame duck section, and nothing may happen there. What are your gut feelings about whether sequestration will take place or they'll, at the last moment, pull a magic rabbit out of the hat?
Yeah, this is something we kind of toss around in the office. My gut feeling